Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Awakenings with Michelle Mache, the weekly dose of spiritual and metaphysical insights and information for navigating the soul path. During the show, if you would like to call in for a reading or with comments or questions, call 347-539-5122 and press 1 on the keypad, or join the Sacred Space of Empowerment live chat. Create a username by registering with Blog Talk Radio. It's great to connect with all of you here.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. So great to connect with everyone. I'm your host, Michelle Mache, and you tuned in to Awakenings Radio, part of the Converging Flow. And I want to just talk a little bit about that. Welcome, everyone, in the chat room. Howdy, howdy. Welcome, guests. Hey, Tamara, hi. And lots of people just getting in. Sound is good. Thank you. Thank you so much. So lots to chat about, lots to talk about. First and foremost, I want to really thank everyone that's co-creating this. Tamara is here. I mean, some of you have been with this program and instituting it in your life. And really grounding the energy, you know, because people come in the chat, even guests, even people that may not respond, or seem to be too interactive in the chat are still getting such amazing energy from all of you. And of course, anybody, you can always ask questions in the chat, or you can call in at 347-539-5122, as well as email me at awakeningsradio@gmail.com. So there's lots of ways to connect. Twitter, Instagram as well, under my name, Michelle Mache, and Awakenings on Facebook. I will suggest it's better, instead of messaging me there, to just post it on the page if you have a communication, if you want to share something or ask something, or better yet, to manage it, email me at awakeningsradio@gmail.com. Yeah, hello everyone. What happens here? What do we do here? We connect, we share. We share our knowledge, our insight. We just show up for ourselves and for each other. We get our little wonderful Wednesday hit of inside inspiration, a little love energy, and hopefully some stuff that you can integrate in your own life from the guests as well as me and from the people in the chat and the callers. The people that call in. I mean, really, all of us are co-creating this program. And on that note, I want to thank everybody, like I was starting to say, because I started a new group and program kind of out of the request from a lot of colleagues that I've been working with individually on this, to really how to actualize your soul gifts in the world. And I'll get back to that in a second. But anyway, I was looking up Soul LOL because that's one of my websites, and we're really starting to activate that. And soulentrepreneurship.life, if you want to go to there. In fact, I had a little curious message from my friend, collaborator, designer, Jennifer, who said, go to Soul Entrepreneurship. And it was right before the show was airing, right before we're about to go live. I'm going to do it now by my iPad. Soul Entrepreneurship dot life. And let's see what's happened. So she's been doing some changes. Anyway, I'm stumbling around on the internet, and then I find, oh, it's getting there. It's getting there. What is it? And is it for you? Okay, I just got to change my picture out. But yeah, it looks great. Thanks, Jen. I'll be texting her later. So anyway, I'm, you know, stumbling through the internet, and I never know what people are posting about me or writing or what, you know, what is it, the crawlers, the web crawlers pick up and put together, and, you know, pictures and et cetera. So all of a sudden I stumble into this something FM radio, and it says top 5 new age podcasts or radio programs. And there we are, right at the top. I went, what? And then it said, yes, practical insight and information, one of the best podcasts. And then somebody had sent me something, too, coincidentally or coinciding with this, I guess there are no coinciding keys. They are synchronicity. Somebody had sent me on iTunes that when you put in Awakenings or my name, that iTunes comes up. So anyway, this is because of all of you and the connecting that you do and holding the space and what the program is evolving to be or becoming. So so we are on one of the top five podcasts in metaphysics and spirituality, according to this podcast station website. So that was kind of a nice, wonderful thing for me to see. And also to pass on to the producers that, we got a question in the chat, and then I'll get back to my little rock and roll. And then we're going to get to callers. You know I love you. I love you all. Please press one, callers, if you want to get on air, if you want to chit-chat. That will help me. What do you guys attend? Websites frequent to stay tuned into this community? Example, Agape, da-da-da-da. That's a good question. So they're asking that in the chat. Tamara, I like Daily Ohm Spirit Library. There's another. And by the way, I have a Daily Ohm course there. I say kind of do it all. I'll be honest. You know, a lot of you know I went to Lightning in a Bottle a couple weekends ago, and there's so many workshops. There's so many things to do. I really think, I've been on this path a very long time. I mean, it's funny, sometimes we have people that come on and they're like, I woke up 7 years ago, or I just started on the path 6 years ago, or 7 or 5 years ago, or whatever. And no judgment on that, but I think I can speak from a long term, because I was studying this actually 13, 14 years old, and channeling since 4. And having visions and dreams, being a natural psychic and an empath, and then the channeling really started developing for me in the late 80s. But I was doing it as a child. I didn't know. My parents kind of shared with me that I'd get these downloads and rants and go off with and all kinds of insight and information. So what I see for myself, as well as the people that I work with, and the thousands of, probably hundreds, thousands by now, people I've helped, but and hundreds of thousands of people I've come across in my path, and the hundreds of teachers, is that, some people will tend to get into a, they kind of park somewhere. And there's some of us, which I kind of term weavers, which I happen to be one of those. I mean, my background and training is so extensive. I mean, it's because of my interest. It's just because that's how my mind works and what makes my joy sing. So I'm all over the place, from hypnotherapy, holistic health counseling, degree in English, taught school, did study massage therapy, healing work. So I've done a lot of esoteric, shaman, but I'm also very grounded and practical. I have counselor training. So that's been my life. And that's been my life also with religions, studying comparative religions. I've studied Hinduism, Buddhism, Kabbalah, Agape. So I studied New Thought. And I literally studied, New Thought and attended years ago Church of Religious Science. I did a little Catholicism, did a little Christianity, did a little born again, like I said, Kabbalah, so I dipped in the Jewish thing. So Baha'i, Jainism, I know I'm missing some. The only thing I haven't studied is, the Mormon religion and, I can't think of it right now, the Muhammad. It's escaping me right now. Somebody put it in the chat. What is it? So, yeah, go where you, did I do a little born again? Oh, yeah, I got born again. Oh, I had born again. I had a devil experience. I mean, I've done it all. I've done depossession work. I'm trained in that. I can do an exorcism, chakra balancing, rebalancing, building homes. I mean, a medium. I've been, I am a medium. So I am able, and I did a lot of work. I still do work in that. But I used to do a lot of on-site work where I'd go where people were having, quote-unquote, ghost phenomenon, entities, whether removing it from a person or a place, and lots of phenomena, you know, red lights flashing, you know, cupboards, you know, opening and closing on their own, and, you know, so just all kinds. And who put in the chat? Must be Tamara. Yeah, of course. Miss Aware. Go where you feel interest. Yes. So I'll be honest. The born again was when I was in junior high, and that was because this boy that I liked. And then, you know, for 2 weeks it lasted. And I did have an amazing experience. I did get saved. I mean, it was amazing because I came home that day or night. And my mom thought, you've been drinking. What's wrong with your eyes? And I was out. I mean, I was like higher than a kite off of this being saved, this whole transcendent experience that had occurred, which lasted about 2 weeks. But for me, having a different relationship to God, to Jesus, to other quote-unquote saints, teachers, mystics, masters, whatever, having seen them as a child and kind of worked with them and had a different experience, I didn't have this thing like, well, only, you know, you only can go kind of through, you know, Jesus. Though as an energy and an entity, he's valid and has done a lot, you know, and I've actually done quite a few healings where he's actually come through, and not just I've seen him, but the people that I've worked with have seen him. And why? A lot of times it's belief system. So this is a whole other conversation, but basically what I wanted to share is that the more that we go into the Aquarian age, the more that we expand, the less we will be in polarizing beliefs or situations, the more we will be weavers and making something your own. There's a wonderful book by Marianne Williamson. It's an oldie. It's called A Woman's Worth. And I believe it's in the front of the book or in the foreword. I think it's in the foreword, actually. And she talks about how some people come in with a coat of many colors. They've got a patchwork coat. And some people come in with a coat of one color, a monochromatic. Neither one is good, better than the other. And so sometimes people, I know people 20, 30 years that parked, they're Buddhist. That's it. Boom. That's their thing. And they did the same meditation over and over. Boom, Hindu. Boom, Christian. You know. And then some people that weave in and out and blend something. And what I will say in your travels, your mental, emotional travels, your spiritual travels, your seeking, that there is a distinct cycle upon the soul path where you move from seeking to finding to being. Now, again, you might go to a new level, which we all do, and then you seek again. But the difference is there's a seeking in the neophyte, in the newbie, you know, I see the newbie metaphysics where people say, you're not conscious if you eat meat, or you have to do, don't, riding your roller, why would you want to be on rollerblade? You need to do yoga, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. Those kinds of things are very old school Piscean. I don't know why I like old school, so I wouldn't say old school. They're just more of a limiting consciousness, because they are essentially espousing that, you know, that there's not variety in the world. And I'm sorry, there is variety, you know, and some people eat meat and some people don't. And for having been a vegan and vegetarian for 20 years, 20 plus years, and then last, I don't know, few years starting to eat meat or certain types of meat, the thing is, I didn't really, in the beginning when I was a newbie, I had judgment. And I can tell you, and I could get into amazing stories, and if some people want to hear some things, but what I can share with you is that in my beginning of my spiritual unfolding, my more conscious unfolding, where I'm more conscious, because we always are spiritually unfolding, but it becomes more conscious, and then the ego personality gets trained and becomes a part of the process. Because remember, as a soul, you are externalized on earth. Your physical body, your desires, is part of your soul. It's part of your, you know, your personality, your ego is your soul externalized on earth. And I go with the psychological term of ego, that it is the preferences, likes, dislikes. We just obviously don't want that part of us running the show. It's not to be the engine, it's to be the caboose, so to speak. In the soul alignment, what starts to happen is instead of having the constructed or false ego, that's what falls away. The false beliefs, limiting beliefs, the beliefs that say, well, I really like chocolate yogurt, but society says I need to have vanilla yogurt. I better only do, vanilla. And so you start stuffing, you know, you start suppressing and you your desires, your true nature, and that gets repressed. So that creates this false ego just to get along or to get ahead, you know. And on that note, you're going to see more people like the Bruce Jenner to the Caitlyn Jenner. Not that that's not been going on. I mean, back in the day, I worked with, this is a funny, great story. I got a job when I lived in England. I got a music video. I went there to study and train and went to the University of London and, getting retrained in some things and did, you know, spiritual healing, Jungian therapy, Jungian psychology, just a lot of different courses. So I got a friend of mine, you know, knew I was did modeling and acting and videos, and I got hired to do a video. But in the meeting, the guy, and he had been in, I think, the movie Chariots of Fire or something, and a very amazing being, had developed this camera that you wear on your chest. I think he was the one, either started using it or he created it anyway, kind of a big deal in Hollywood. So I got the job, and then he said, but there's one thing, when you get to work with me, I will be, I'm transitioning, I will be a woman. I'll have breasts and this and that. I'm thinking to myself, I really don't care. As long as I get the job, I get the money, that's, you know, and it'll be fun. I get to, you know, dance around and act a little. So I didn't care. The only thing that was hard is that when I did get the job, you know, it was like 6 weeks, 7 weeks later that we shot, and, you know, I had to keep remembering to change the name, you know, because his name had changed, and he was fully transitioned to she. So why am I bringing this up? Diversity, diversity. The soul is diverse. The universe is diverse. Many species, many ways of expressing ourselves. Every time there's a question, there's an answer. And every time there's an answer, there's a new question and there's a new answer. So everybody and everything is a reflection of God, is a reflection of the all that is. So everything that's here, guys, is meant to be here. Every expression, every mathematical equation, every possibility being played out until, for whatever reason, it doesn't need to be. There's not enough resonance holding it in place. We're done. We're just done with it. There's no charge. There's no, what keeps things on the planet is the emotional charge, either so for something or so against something. And so, you know, what I found through, you know, my explorations and the life experience that I've had in these realms is a lot of times I thought people were not that evolved. And then later in meditation, or there's a few instances of the person crossing over and then coming back to me and bringing me some amazing experiences, and then them telling me from the other dimension, the other side, oh, If I was still not evolved, how come I can bring this or do this, you know, or make this physical thing happen? I was like, you know, that's kind of true, you know. So we don't really know what people are playing out here. And what I can say is the more evolved we get, the more conscious, the less black and white things get. We're a little less like, I'm not so sure. I'm gonna leave the door open. I'm not gonna, you know, there's a lot of hues. Not just gray, but there's blue, but there's a light blue, there's a dark blue, there's an indigo blue. So you allow that more. That's why we move into the universal law, the loving law of allowance. You cannot fully express your soul design unless you move into the loving law of allowance, right? You've got, people forget about this. They forget about the law of resonance. Everybody wants the law of magnetic attraction. Let me just get what I want. But you don't know what you want until you can allow and honor somebody else's life, until you can move from, you know, acceptance, respect, and honoring. You may not like it. Now, we can judge what's right for us on our path, but ultimately, we can't judge where somebody else is at because we don't have all the puzzle pieces. So this is why I hear people say proclamation, they're not evolved because they're doing this or that. Because I did it. I came from that space, you know, and at the time, especially when my mom was really sick, I mean, I was hardcore vegan. You know, I didn't have, you know, the clothes, everything was vegan. You know, and it was before it was popular, by the way, you know, so I was even more of a little nutty, you know, my friends and I, we were kind of the fringe weirdos, you know, and my shampoo, you know, my dad would bring something over and I'd look at the label. Oh my God, it's got this in it. And I just thought, well, if people are very evolved, my mom was really sick. I thought she's really evolved. She, you know, she'll stop eating meat. She'll do this. She'll meditate. She'll go to this thing and that thing. And that's not so true because that wasn't her path, you know. So one of my greatest teachers said, you know, Dr. Han, you know, you don't know somebody's total path and you don't know what they're reflecting to you, what they're sharing for you. Because in truth, everyone is our teacher to some degree. And I have asked, in fact, one of the questions I got today for the show, which was interesting because I'm having gone to Lightning and Bottle, and I do go to a lot of, you know, festivals and concerts and I guess people call them raves. I never really called them that, but all I know is there's a DJ there and I can dance 2-4 hours. So I had a question, and I've gotten this a few times, and so I'm going to kind of address it in the light of what I'm sharing. I say this even with, you know, my clients I work with. Anytime you stay too long at the parade, too long at the party, we know what that is. You stay too long with something, it's not productive for you. And only you and somebody that's really honest and more aware and conscious that's working with you, a mentor that's working with you, can help you decide this. The thing is, because we can fool ourselves, and that's the thing we don't want to do. You know, it can be, you know, everything is resonance, everything is vibration. So what is it that we're staying too long here? You know, what are we staying too long? Are we staying too long alone? We have to do it all on our own. You know, life is lonely. Are we staying too long with we can never be alone? So the couple of questions I got was, what do I, and I always get this, people are asking, you know, I've had people call in, what do I think of medicine, ayahuasca and things like that, LSD. So I've got like 5 or 6 questions on this. What do I think of marijuana? What do I think of, you know, people, you know, doing drugs? Does that harm you on the spiritual path? So in light of staying kind of Switzerland, staying kind of neutral, because I do believe people experiment. I did in my teens and my, you know, I think early 20s. Actually, I probably stopped 17, 18, and maybe did a little something 21, 22. For me, it was done. I got bored with it. I did my experimentation. It was done. I have far better experiences in my meditations or just aligning, just attuning. But then again, I have a very rich inner life. You know, I have a very, as one of my teachers said, a dream life. You know, it's the dream therapy and lucid dreaming. I feel this way all the time, you know, even if I'm sad, even if I'm depressed, even though I'm going through something, I feel a sense of connectedness to my higher self, to God, the universe, to each other. I have people that I can call. What I can tell you, when you are doing things like that, especially on a regular basis, it does wear down your aura. So it can put holes in the aura, and it can make you susceptible to other entities or energies coming in through you. Now, whether that's good or bad, I don't know. It depends what it is. And some people, one person wrote me and said, I'm working with somebody and I'm doing it this way and that way to have the opening. Do you need it? No. Because we have everything within us. This is one of the reasons, you know, early on in my, you know, healing life and career, I was doing a lot of research with people kind of being tested. And also, you know, I think some people, you know, you listeners know, I did work with the flotation tanks just because they're made of metal. So I was able at the end of the day to go in, and they kept notes on the people that, you know, came in, people filled something out, and I was able to see if that person in flotation tank 7, they had a cold, they did this or that, this is what they were thinking, this is what they looked like, an all too high level accuracy. So that, and why am I saying this? It's like, because we have that, we all have this within us to have the transcendent experiences. Do you need to do it by these medicines, ayahuasca, LSD? I would say no, but some people say they do, and some people say, you know, those people that have been in trauma or like vets that have these amazing openings with this. So I can't speak. It's the same way when I work with clients that some of them are on anti-anxiety or antidepressants. And there's chemical imbalances that haven't been able to been helped holistically. In my mind, my belief is it better to not have to go there? Yes, but sometimes you do. Just like sometimes you need antibiotics, right? And sometimes you break your leg and you need it set, and sometimes you need stitches. So I already came from the approach of only the holistic, only the alternative. And there does need to be, you know, the Western medicine or the conventional. Again, it's a balance. Again, one of the ways to know if you're progressing on the soul path and you're awakening more is, again, you're less rigid in your views. You understand that they're just views. They're just beliefs. You're living by your certain beliefs. Now, in saying that, there are general things. If I'm all the time in an abusive relationship, not such a good thing. If all the time I'm angry or I'm raging, not so expanded awareness. All the time if I'm depressed or apathetic, something's going on. So again, it's our path. There are these steps that are very general, but then there are parts that are very individual. And that takes a higher level of awareness and self-honesty and working with somebody that is, you know, also, you know, of that level to kind of say, hey, what you doing here? You keep doing this. Why are you doing it this way? Because remember, though we're here to express and experience ourselves as us, soul beings, and express and experience with each other, you know, that's why this self-expression, creativity, collaboration, being of service, we're here for love. We are here also to grow, whatever that means on a soul level. And it's up to us individually to find out, what does that mean? What does it mean to grow as a soul? It may not mean the same thing as your friend down the street or me or somebody else that you talk to. So if you're doing these things that are so invasive too long and they change too much, changing the brain chemistry over and over and over, especially some of these harder drugs, it does lower serotonin levels. It does mess with the mind. It messes with the brain chemistry as well. And anything that dehydrates you too much, you got to ask yourself, why would you want to do this? Why would you want to do this? So what are you trying to get? What is your expectation? What are you trying to get? What is your motivation? Why do you feel the need to do this? And I do remember at one of the festivals I was at a while back, and people knew I didn't do this kind of, you know, the drugs. And somebody said, and I don't know, one of the guys is pretty kind of scientific, medically, young guy, I don't know, mid-20s, and he said, oh, you're one of the lucky ones. You have it naturally. You're able to tune into it. Well, I did all, I am natural, have these transcendent experiences, but I also done a lot of therapy and emotional clearing and healing work. I didn't always live in the, you know, this centered state, and I still get off the centered state. I mean, that's why the Buddhists say, you know, being centered and balanced is like balancing on the head of a pin. It's not static. I just have the tools. I put the time in, the self-love and self-care on myself to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have this for myself. I'm going to, you know, peel the onion and uncover all this stuff and get to more and more the true me. And what are the tools that help me do this? What kind of people, hanging out with what kind of people? What kind of activities help me do this? What kind of mindset? What kind of beliefs? So there's always going to be work involved as long as we're on the earth plane. There's always going to be persistent effort. That's just the game that's here. So I didn't say anything because I didn't want to be, I was already a little on my soapbox with the anti-drug thing. So I didn't want to, you know, or hard drugs. I didn't want to go there or anything too that you're doing too much. And it's no longer life enhancing for you. But I will say, to answer these listener questions, that yes, there can be because of this, also the effects of it. And that would be anything, for anything you're doing too much, you know. Yeah, it does wear down your vitality, your life-enhancing energy, the prana. And it does tend to dent or wear down and even to some degree put gaps or holes in the aura. So, yes, that is a reality. Now, maybe you have a breakthrough in it. But again, I'm not the type of person also that, you know, people say, oh, I'm going to this retreat, or I'm going, you know, I'm doing this breakthrough weekend. And I'm like, but then they don't do anything else. I'm not a big part. That's why the work that I do is either monthly or 2 weeks with people, or, you know, weekly clients that work with me, because you need to have the consistent, that's why you do the show. You need to have not only what you hear, but when you do community or group work or your own inner work on a consistent basis, it's not just what you're hearing and what you're figuring out cognitively or mentally. It's the energy. There's a carrier wave. Like when I come on the program, or when I work with, do group work or individual work, I get into meditation. I align so that higher frequencies can come through and so that I'm here completely. So when you're doing that, it's not just what somebody's saying, it's the transmission of energy. There's Shakti that's coming through. And then if somebody's been initiated in that and has that as a gift or a, you know, ability, then you're getting more of that. So this is why we need to meet and share and hear each other's voice, feel each other, feel each other's words in the chat, feel each other's words when we're talking. You know, there is the visual to it, but it's the tone, it's the energy, it's what are the complex frequencies that are coming at you. It's like, I was thinking today, you know, I've been kind of a little under the weather when I came back, you know, the empath, it's like there's a lot of, you know, stimuli that I had at LIB, and I'm just kind of, you know, even though I meditated and took time out, there's all the music, the courses, the people, the lights, the cars, the ding, 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 you know, there's just a lot. So, and I noticed I've been going all the time for my little green mug, when normally I use an orange or red. Remember our wonderful guest, Shira Hunt, who said everything is energy. Everything is vibration. So sometimes, you know, you can't do carpeting because it's too much. It's not the right resonance for you. You need hardwood floors. Or maybe you need less pictures on the wall or more. Or maybe you need more yellow. I would say look in your life what colors you're drawn to. And that's going to tell you what you're needing to integrate, what's happening with you. So as I drink my mug, it's not just this wonderful tea that I'm drinking or my wonderful ginger shots that I've been having with lemon, ginger, turmeric, and a little bit of honey, raw. It's the color. It's the color of the cup. I'm receiving healing, universal healing through the complex frequencies of this color green. Okay, green is about that, and certain greens do certain things. So look around your life and see what are you drawn to, as Tamara put in the chat, what naturally interests you, and that is going to bring you into an awareness of what you're needing to integrate or what's happening in your life. The universe is always talking to us. Our higher self is the mediating principle of us, the part that's always listening. See, the ego personality, it's very fickle, or it gets fixed on things. So, you know, sometimes we have to train ourselves to be less fixed on something, but some people that are perhaps scattered need to learn to bring more of that focused or fixed energy in. It's kind of like astrology. So, but the mediating principle that lets me know what do I need to do is that aspect of my being, what you call the higher self, that connects us to the soul. But we get there by meditating. We have to slow down. We have to ask the question, what do I need to do? What do I need to integrate? Where am I at? We have to, you know, even if it's just, it doesn't have to be, it's not about time. It's not about an hour or 20 minutes. It's about whatever it takes for you. Sometimes we have so much going on, or we're very agitated or anxious, it might take us more to get to that place of deeper knowing within ourselves. That's why I like doing, you know, meditations when I get up, so that I'm there. What am I seeing? What animal beings am I seeing? What birds? What colors? Who am I talking to? What's coming? What am I feeling? And that's what makes life so amazing and interesting. That's the ride. That's the trip. That's the surrealness. I don't think it gets more amazing than that. And your colors will get brighter. You will be able to see beyond physical form. You know, I had somebody take one of my workshops, Soul Path teleworkshops, and she emailed me back and said, this was the best high I ever had. She goes, I felt like I was on LSD. And I felt I was seeing colors and I was hearing things. And all we did was tune into the subtle energy. That's all we did. It's there all the time. And you don't have any dehydration and headache and whatever else goes on with that. So I hope I answered the question for those of you that called in or emailed me rather on this. It's again, on your path, you're going, I would say be open, because your community could also be community of artists. It could be musicians. I know, like at Lightning in a Bottle, we had some amazing times with people coming with a guitar, and I had my percussion, and I got to do some chanting and some singing. And that's satsang, that like-minded individuals coming together. That's all it means in Sanskrit, okay, in an honoring way. So you have to decide, where is your satsang or your sangha? But remember, the soul likes variety, so let yourself have a few communities. You'll see that it doesn't matter if you're with creatives or musicians, or you're with people that like to pick up trash at the beach, or you're with people that like to hike, or you're at places like Agape or Unity, the Metaphysical Bible Research Center, you know, PRN, you know, whatever, you know, Philosophical Research Center. You're going to find there's a common thread, there's a commonality there, there's enough commonality to hold you in place. So remember, our community, just like our soul group, the groups that we come in with, it's not necessarily by what we do. It can be. That's the preferences. Trust me, when I was a model, I would be with people that were just so different from me. I mean, they had private planes. You know, they were, you know, landing at airstrips. They were, you know, owned islands. But there would be something that would be similar. There would be some. A lot of times they wanted healing work. A lot of times they were having some kind of little awakening, you know, or some of them a lot of awakening. Some of them had some kind of experience. There would always be enough. Otherwise, we wouldn't meet. We wouldn't connect up. You know, what we don't have enough resonance to, we don't have an experience with. It's neutral. It just kind of passes. You know, it's like why you look at one person walking down the street and not another, and they go, oh, didn't you see so-and-so? Well, there wasn't enough resonance there, even if they're right in front of you, you know, and I've had that happen, you know. This is why, just like lovely doggy beings, animal beings, and tell me if other beings do this. I definitely know dogs do this. They get a vibe whether something is life-enhancing or not. Should I go check it out? Or they can tell if the other dog is unstable and overly aggressive. They won't go there. It's usually the humans. Oh, he's nice. Don't worry. You know, oh, he's friend. Well, sometimes he's not friendly, and there's a fight, or, you know, or they pick up on the human end, just like children, you know, in infants, they pick up on the adult energy, fear and settlement that's not being channeled through. Because that's what we do, guys. That's what we do as open beings. We channel everything through. This is why it's a limiting belief. It's kind of really, I don't want to say old school, but for lack of a better word, this idea of having to protect yourself from people, right? Put the light around yourself and protect. I mean, you can do that, like with a house, or see guardian angels there, or whatever beings that you want guarding or watching something. But the truth is, an interaction with people, and that's more things, is interaction with people. Like some people, how can you protect myself? I feel this energy. Just let it go through. Don't resist it. Just channel it. Move it through. Because everything that we experience is by vibration. So there has to be enough resonance enough coherence for you to have that experience. You know, sometimes it's, oh, I'm working with this person and they're pulling on me. Well, they're only pulling on you because you're allowing that to some degree. To some degree, you have a mental emotional agreement or a resonating, you know, something isn't clear in the subtext, you know, the subconscious mind, that you're allowing them to plug in. So we are willing or unwilling participants. This is why we have the spiritual tools, the emotional tools, so that we can find out, hey, what's going on here on a deeper level? I'm saying I want X, Y, and Z, but I'm actually attracting, you know, E and F. What's going on here? And invariably, you will find that you have a pattern or you know, complex group of patterns or a mental construct that's holding this in place. Let us get to one more quick question. Let's see, a meditation for agitation or anxiety, and this is coming from Roberta. One of the things that I can suggest is a contemplation meditation, and that you connect, again, in meditation, simply in Sanskrit, there's three phases, or there's three parts to meditation, which is dhyana in the Hindi tradition, and Sanskrit, or vipassana, which just means awareness of what is. If you study in Sanskrit, what dhyana, or what it's just awareness of what is, breath control, breath awareness, breath control, those two things equal samasi or samadhi, oneness. That's all meditation is. It's not, I'm going to feel happy. You might, and a lot of times you do. I'm going to get blissed out. I'm going to see the blue pearl. You might. So in your life, when you become aware of what is and you bring the breath to it, the breath control, the inspira, the inspiration, all that is, God, the universe, however you want to talk it, you inspire, inspirar. All you need to do is focus. You can feel what you're feeling, Roberta. Feel the anxiety, feel the fear, and then go back to the breath. Feel the fear, go back to the breath. Notice if you're breathing too tight. You know, you want to let the exhalation be a little longer than the inhalation. That elicits a relaxation response. And you come into oneness. Now, when we move into that oneness, obviously we start getting some peace and calm there because things don't seem so dire. We think, oh, well, I'm connected to the universe. I feel it. It's no longer an intellectual thing. It's something that we're feeling within us. So there's another type of contemplation meditation you can do is where you see that the fear, you start feeling it and you maybe see it as a shape or a form. And with the in-breath, you see the shape, the form, and the out-breath, you move it outside of you. Now, again, you're moving it into the subtle energy of you so that it can dissipate. So that would be another. There's a lot of different types of meditations for people depending on whether you're more mentally focused, emotionally focused, or physically focused. So for some people, I might even suggest that they do a walking meditation daily, like people that are too stuck in their mind, or have a lot of emotional angst or emotional charge, or perhaps they're going through difficult emotional states. So to those, a lot of times, or maybe you're thinking a lot. When you go for a walking meditation, again, what is it? Dhyana, right? Vipassana, dhyana, pranayama, or samadhi, or samadhi. And samadhi is the ultimate oneness. It's when you are subsumed back into the universe. And samadhi is the, you know, the transcendent within the human body still. So if you're doing a walking meditation, you become aware of the breath. Become aware of how your feet are moving, the pace and pattern of your arms. And you look around. You start noticing and you go back to the breath. So again, awareness of what is. So where are you on in your environment? You go back, look at the tree, or there's cars, or you're in this country, there's a cow, whatever's there, and then breath awareness. Breath awareness and breath control is pranayama. The control is in slowing the breath down. Now, you'll get there anyway with awareness. If you bring your awareness to what's around you or inside you and back to the breath will automatically begin to slow down anyway. And there is that oneness. Mantra meditation, you can also do. Mantra meet mind is taking a thought. I love so hum, hum so. I am that, that I am. So hum, hum so. Breathe in, so hum. Breathe out, hum so. I also like Om Namah Shivaya. But I love myriad of chanting, but if I'm really going through something, those are the two I usually do. Or other things that I'm chanting. Kali Durga is one. But mantra, so that's another one. And you could even say, I'm so at peace. I'm peace and calm. I'm safe in the universe. The universe is here for me. Whatever, you can make up your own mantra that you're using, but just remember you need to have the breath awareness and the breath control with the breath. So, and there'll come a time in your meditation when you get into that oneness state where you're no longer focusing on what is in the breath. It's all the same. That's where the oneness comes in. And so it's possible to do meditation and still feel a sense of sadness or worry or something, but you will connect with the place of you that is always feeling centered and peaceful and calm. So make sure in your meditation practice that you don't have this goal, well, I'm going to get out of this feeling, because you may or you may not. You know, it's like fleeting. I remember with one of my meditation teachers, well, two of them, Muktananda and Gotamayi, and they would say people were always trying to catch the blue pearl, and which I did have quite a few meditation sessions where the blue pearl was there for me. But then, of course, you want to get, I want the blue pearl again. I want to see it and feel that feeling. And then it eludes you, you know. So that's kind of a little spiritual cosmic joke is, you know, again, what we kind of clutch for, you know, we clutch for peace, it eludes us. We clutch for happiness, it eludes us. But when we are in gratitude for what we have, we automatically start getting happy, get happier and happier, get a sense of joy. Ooh, like that's, I've got these problems and they're kind of looming, they're kind of big, but I'm focusing now on what I do have, what brings me joy in my life and what's kind of funny and how I have a great family or friends or whatever it is, whatever that you have. When you start focusing on that, all of a sudden the gratitude and appreciation comes up some notches. But it's the process that brings us there. It's not the thinking about it. That's what's so interesting about any kind of transpersonal or transcendent work. It's the process. You know, if we keep it to process, the process is there for us. The process is, again, what gets us out of the mind hold. Okay, we have a caller 201-919, and the number to call in is 347-539-5122. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Michelle, this is Shannon.
Hey, Shannon, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to tell you I started your daily OM course yesterday. I'm pretty excited.
Yay! Tell me, and you've got to keep in touch. You know, don't hesitate to ask questions.
Okay.
You know, email me or call in on air. And where are you at now in the course?
This is so cool. I just started this week. But I've been doing meetings and some journaling, so I think I'm on good track. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, I love it. You're, it's, if I do say, you know, it took me about 9 months to create that, almost a year, maybe even over. Yeah, it was, everybody's like, why do you want to do a little 3 week or a month? I'm like, no, I got to get all this. Yeah. I can dissect it later, but it's, and you get the course for a year. So you can go back to it as many times as you want, which I love
awesome.
That Daily OM does that. Yeah. Wow, great. So that's great news.
And I do have a question for you.
Okay.
I've been working a lot on like making change in my life because I've been feeling like mm-hmm. I've hit some dead ends and it's time to just get even more in alignment, I think. So I've been changing some of my work. I've been dealing with some physical injuries, so that's kind of spurred on some okay. made me want to make some more change. And now I'm kind of looking at my like relationships, and particularly with my friends, like but especially a group of friends that come from a certain part of my life where I, you know, face some challenges. And I guess I'm kind of wondering, like, I'm feeling inclined to, like, get some distance from them, but I also, mm-hmm. I don't just want to back off and not, like, address any challenges, you know, problems that might be worth going into. So I just wanted to see if you had any insight on that or, like, tips for support in evolving those relationships, too.
Okay. And you're thinking of, you'd like to, what's going on with them with you? I'm hearing you want to wind out from them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of the relationships really feel like I'd like to, like, keep them alive. Some of them, they just feel kind of stale and, like, they come from I know them from a time, like, I was competing, running, and they were my teammates, and I got hurt during that time, and I'm still not really over that. Okay. So there's kind of like that backstory, which
okay.
feels like, yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing, and we all have to do that. Leave them be. Because anything we're done with, is there is less and less resonance. We move into a neutral state on it. Almost like a state of boredom, like, oh, you know, it's like, it's there, but not there. And what I would say is definitely work on, and I think I do have a chapter in this in my Daily Own course, Your Greatest Soul Shift, to do the emotional releasing, emotional clearing on what you're feeling, what you're going through. Because what will work through it on your own, because it's your own triggering of what they're bringing mm-hmm. up, or, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes it's disappointment that people aren't, quote unquote, further along, or why are they doing this, or they're reminding me of that, and da da da. But when we get in there and do the declarations, you know, like, well, I need to leave, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but believe me, we've all been there, you know, well, I cannot talk to you anymore, I can't be around you. Then it's coming from the wounded self, the inner child, the constructed ego. So let them be focused more on you.
Mm-hmm.
And because you never know, I mean, the path of the soul, the path of our spiritual, you know, unfolding is so secure, you know, circular, so circuitous that a lot of times these people can come back into your life where they can even be teaching you something, or they wake up a little and then they need you, or, oh, I remember what you're talking about, or you're at more of a similar path and you can mirror for each other, or not. It doesn't always have to be like that, but I have found usually it is like that, that there's something, because anytime we're feeling hurt, it's something with us. It's something coming from mm-hmm. our past. Even if somebody did something in the present, it's our own healing work to do. And what will happen if you just leave them be, then you enact the loving law of allowance. You know, so we've got a lot of universal laws. We've got, you know, law of correspondence, as above, as below. But some main ones I feel that if people integrate, you know, while you're doing your healing and clearing work and getting, what helps you get clearer is to look at your life and see what you're attracting. You know, if it's life enhancing, if it's feeling in alignment. And sometimes, Shan, we're in a place where we don't know because we're changing. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's right for us. We don't know which way to go because we're kind of marinating, I call it. You know, we're like soup, but all the ingredients haven't come together yet. So we have to just be in that place and be in our own mode of self-discovery, self-understanding, maybe connect with others, but not try to make definitive decisions of I'm going to be with that person or that people or no, this one, yes, this is my tribe, this is my group. No, because things are still in process. So if you start enacting that loving law of allowance, then you start moving more by resonance. You connect into resonance and you start seeing where you're meant to go and what you're meant to do. Then what happens when you move into resonance, it's only until you move into resonance that you really start enacting a true, what I would call the true, more aligned vibrationally to you, law of magnetic attraction. You magnetically start drawing in people and situations that are supportive of you on a, you know, on a soul and your soul nature. Once that starts happening, and only then can we move into conscious creation. And I'll share something really quickly here, is that I had this experience recently. This is what I'm going to be talking about in my soul entrepreneurship groups. It's the same cycle over and over, but once you just becoming more awake and aware, you just start recognizing it. Well, I came to a point, I'm doing this group, I'm doing that, and all of them are feeling good. You know, I still will do my soul, you know, path teleworkshop. But I had some opportunities to do some other groups, but I wasn't quite sure. Nothing was kind of feeling it. So I couldn't move into conscious creation. I could have forced some things. I could have forced created some things that I thought was going to be fun or make money or, you know, or my idea of helping people. But I know, no, this, there's not enough resonance here, Michelle. You can't move into conscious creation right now. Just keep doing what you're doing. Do more meditation, more journaling, be more in your practice. Just be aware and start, just be open. Just be open. Because how do we know what to do on a soul level? We follow the opening. All of a sudden, people start out of the blue. People that I hadn't seen or worked with in a long time. I did a workshop and two people came up and said, I really wish you'd do these groups again. And would you ever consider helping people manifest their dreams or make their soul purpose? You know, I want to live my soul purpose. I want to get paid for what I do. You know, I want to know how you did what you did. So then I'm getting, and a client of mine is telling me this, you know, a few of them came up, you know, would you ever do this on a group level, what you help people individually? And then one of my clients, Angela, who people that have done the Soul Path workshops, she's in that. And she said, Michelle, would you ever do this? And I think you should call it soul entrepreneurship. And I went, oh, okay. Now I move into conscious creation, right? I'm excited. Oh, my God. Because remember, your soul purpose and how you express that will always be answering a need in the universe, a genuine need, not just coming from fear of needing to make money, but a big need. So now I'm excited. I'm writing, ding, telling people, I'm emailing, and I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Then these producers that I'm working with heard of it, and they're like, oh, my God, this is going to be a TV show. Oh, my God, Michelle, one of them is going to be coming. And they're like, oh, this is great. I want to introduce you to this agent. This is, you know, you've been, this is new, cutting edge. And I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my. But I couldn't have done that. This is my sharing with you. I couldn't have done that until I let go of what I perceived I needed to be doing or who I needed to be around and just be, kind of, it was a little, you know, it's always a little scary because you think, oh, my God, am I being a procrastinator? I'm not doing enough. I should be on this. I should be more. So I feel you're at that place. You're, and that doing the Daily Om course, your greatest soul shift, is perfect for you right now. I feel be in that open space. Let things come and go. People come and go in your life. Just let everything be. And when you want to correct something externally outside of you, whether a person or bring it back to you and say, what do I need right now? You know, what's my motivation? What's my intention? Am I a little nervous? Am I anxiety? I'm trying to push and bring it back to you. And then as you keep doing that and let yourself keep, be kind of in this ambiguous, kind of loose state, what will start happening is people will start showing up in your life that start now reflecting where you're meant to go, or you'll hear things, or you'll see things on the internet or TV or Netflix or whatever, or you read something in a book. The messages will start coming in, and then you'll hear people verbalize it. It's amazing how that happens. Sometimes people say things that go, oh, I don't even know why I said that, why I brought that up to you. You'll start getting those messages, and then you can respond consciously. So you're at a pivotal point because you're in that next level of soul alignment. You're clearing the stuff, the gunk. Once you start doing that and just kind of hang in the place that our constructed ego doesn't like. It's like the, feels like no control. Where am I going? Nothing's happening. When you're in, allow that zone, once you get more comfortable in that zone, or just maybe you don't have to be comfortable with it, just allow that to be, let it be, let everything be, then the messages will start coming to you. And from the messages, you'll get the true GPS. You'll get the true direction.
That's so much. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Like every level. Yeah. I really like what you said. Just let it be. I feel like that's the message I needed to hear along with the story.
Yeah.
Too.
I guess, who did that? Let it be with the song. I can't remember person's names right now. I'm so expanded. But there's a reason that let it be, you know, because if we get in, if we don't let it be and we get in and start moving, moving things and trying to change things, then
yeah,
that's
kind of
where our energy and focus,
things.
Yeah, no fixing. But this is a, you know why? Because the constructed ego wants, wants to have some control. And so when we can't control ourselves, because we don't know where we're going, we're in this unfolding, it's easier to control someone else or something outside of us. But then it dilutes our energy. So that's the thing to remember. It'll actually dilute what you're doing and the steam that you're accumulating, the spiritual energy that's accumulated.
Yeah.
Remember, every breakthrough or breakdown to breakthrough, every breakthrough happens because in one certain direction, something has accumulated so much, some kind of energy. You know, if I dive in the pool and then all of a sudden I, splash out of it, it's because now there's so much direction coming out. You know, it's a matter of physics as well. But we have to let that energy accumulate. So the more that you're in that in-between stage, it just keeps building until there's this crescendo and boom, there's the breakthrough. So you're on the right path. Just keep to it, okay?
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, keep us posted. Well, you brought up a question that so many people have. So you're about thousands of our listeners. You know, this is it's such a critical and crucial part of the path because it's cosmic decision making time. You know,
yeah.
Do you go for
and
the
it,
breakthrough
I appreciate the
or
support, 'cause it feels so like, scary. I think it's
just scary because but the scary is only to the constructed ego because it doesn't feel its feet on the pool at the bottom of the pool. Now you were in 5 feet, you can touch. Now you're in 6, now you're in 7 feet, and it's like, oh my God, where, you know, should I swim to the edge? And you can. That's what our spiritual tools are. That's what our mental emotional tools are. They let us rest at the side of the pool, or we float on our back, you know. So that's where you're at right now, but there will be a breakthrough. If you manage the energy of where you're at, it is this allowing, letting it be, and processing those emotions.
All right.
Processing those emotions. Our next guest is going to be actually, by what I've read of her stuff, we'll be touching on this too. So you got to have the tools. It's like building a house. It doesn't just happen in our mind. We got to do the physical stuff around it. Thanks for calling in. That was great.
Okay.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Michelle. Bye-bye. Talk to you.
You're
soon.
Welcome. Bye-bye. Talk to you later. Oh, I love that. Love that. I love how our guests always synchronistically dovetail into what we've been talking about. And we have Sunita Patani, who's the author of The Transcendent Mind, The Missing Piece in Emotional Well-Being. How is that? That's so apropos. Sunita is a psychologist as well as an author based in East London. He specializes in exploring the link between mind, body, spirit, and emotional healing. Since childhood, she's been fascinated with science, spirituality, consciousness, and the deeper question of who we really are. She explores this question from a multidisciplinary perspective and implements the findings within her therapy practice. She's also a graduate of the University of Birmingham, where she obtained a degree in mathematics, science, and education. Her postgraduate certificate is in education, and she also has a background in hypnotherapy and psychotherapeutic counseling. And she basically helps people with essential tools for mastering your mind. Welcome to the program, Sunita.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, am I pronouncing, is it Sunita?
Yep, that's absolutely right.
Oh, brilliant, thank you. Wow, you couldn't have asked for a better guest with our topic and questions today with people really being in that place of letting go, letting things be, the unknown, and of course, what stuff comes up, emotional stuff comes up around that, a lot of fear. We had some questions about anxiety. So what is your perfect? You're perfect for today. Well, thank you for being
oh,
here.
Oh, bless. Thank you for having me.
Before we kind of dive into your work, because I'm really, I love the title of the book and what it represents, and in researching around, there's some specific questions I want to ask you around that. But I always like to ask people, what do you term your first awakening, and how did that happen for you, and how did you cope or deal with that and integrate that in your life?
Wow, I think that's a really good question, actually. I think I must have been about 5 or 6. So actually, when it happened, I don't think at the time I was aware that that's what you would, I guess, term as an awakening, really. But I remember just pondering on the question that I wonder what would happen if the world was no longer here. You know, for a 5 or 6-year-old, that's actually quite a frightening question to think that, oh, my goodness, like, you know, if the world blew up or if there was no universe, like, that would really be the end of us, really, you know. And I think really with that theme in mind, I kind of just, I guess, moved through in life. And I guess that question at a very young age just propelled me further into, you know, into questioning really the nature of who we are.
And so how did you integrate that in your life, even at that age? Did you keep allowing questioning and to be in that space?
I think what happened, you know, I'm not sure that I did actually now looking back. I was always very aware that I was somewhat more emotionally mature than other children my age. So it wasn't so much that I kept on pondering the question. It was more at the time that I was trying to maybe fit in and really learn how to communicate with children my age. But then as I got older, I gradually started to understand that, oh, actually, this is interesting. I think, you know, the way that I process things is slightly different. And then when I was 19, I actually got into a conversation with somebody who told me about the Celestine Prophecy. And that's really when I started reading around the subject and, and just really beginning to get to grips with it.
I love that. That you, seems to me like a good, you know, allowed yourself to be in that space and, you know, open to this part of you. I think that's a big thing for people's awakenings or their first awakening is how to nurture that along. And then, you know, like you said, the Celestine Prophecy. I think it's interesting how the books come to us that support our path and our journey.
Absolutely. And they tend to come at the right time as well, don't they, Michelle? It's interesting. I always kind of think that, you know what they say, don't you, that when the student's ready, the teacher appears. So I think, yeah, the books tend to come along at the right time, you know, to really help us move forward with our journeys.
Mm-hmm. Now, you, let's break it down a little bit about the transcendent mind and what you term that, and I love how you put this, the missing piece in emotional well-being. And if you could touch, I tend to agree. I think we have to move into the transcendent, you know, eventually, you know, you can't just stay, you know, inner child or the, you know, the regular, if you will, aspects of us, you know, the more mundane. But if you could kind of dive into what you mean by that and how is it the missing piece?
Absolutely. Actually, what I'll do is, Michelle, I'll put it into context. So what happened, when I qualified as a psychotherapist, and I started seeing people in my private practice, and, you know, some of them would heal with the conventional therapeutic techniques that I'd been taught. But actually, you know, truthfully, if I'm speaking, many of them wouldn't heal. You know, I mean, I'd start questioning, well, first of all, is it me? Am I doing something wrong? Maybe, you know, I'm newly qualified. But then I started noticing that actually some of these people had been in therapy before and it hadn't worked. So then my natural question was, well, is it you? Do you really want to be changing? You know, are you doing everything you can? And then, of course, there were some people who weren't, but then there were some people who were. So really, I started looking at why people were not healing. You know, what was it? What was missing? And then there'd be the cases, you know, that you'd get where there was no explanation. So somebody would come in and they'd be like, well, I haven't actually got a problem as such. I just feel empty. And so I was like, okay, let's go into the past. Let's look at what the issues are. And of course, there was nothing prominent there, so to speak. And at the same time, I started reading, a lot more reading, Course in Miracles, the Bhagavad Gita. And actually, one of the most profound things in both of those texts was that there was an all-pervading consciousness. So A Course in Miracles talked about the idea of there being one mind, which was split into many individual minds. And I remember reading it and thinking, well, how interesting. You know, if that's true, then surely that's got to have some sort of a reflection on how we're, putting therapy forward. So I carried on reading, and being quite logical as I am, I thought, well, where am I actually going to look to validate this? You know, where can I go to actually find out if this is true? And that's when I started looking at near-death experiences. Now, at the time, I didn't actually realize that near-death experiences was actually an academic field of study, which it is. And so I started looking into it, and, you know, the more I researched into near-death and parapsychology, the more I discovered that actually, you know, this is interesting. It really does seem like there's one consciousness. And that's how I put forward the idea of a transcendent mind. And the reason it's the missing piece is quite simply because my personal opinion is that how can we possibly heal ourselves if we don't first know who we are? You know, therapy is not just about talking and exploration. Therapy, I think, is also about learning and guidance about things that, you know, we don't know about ourselves. So that's how it came about.
I love that. Again, you're perfect, because this is something I've been sharing with the listeners as well, that you have to get beyond that personal individual into the collective, or the one mind, or the transcendent, the transpersonal, and how to bring that into your living. Otherwise, you don't get to that deeper meaning, or the feeling of deeper meaning. And of course, that parlays with people that say, I have this emptiness, or, you know, what are we here for? I don't know why I'm here. I'm lost, like this kind of lost rudder. I want to get your take. I find it interesting because I'm not sure when you studied this, but I know when I was, and you even said it's a discipline. At one point, it really wasn't. There was all these certificate courses you had to take. Now, of course, there's whole programs based on this, and departments of Arizona State and the London University. They have Santa Monica. I can't remember the name of it. It's like colleges. I don't know if it's we have degrees in transpersonal psychology. Do you see a trend happening where there is more, not only an opening to this, but this becoming more mainstream, as well as more people opening to this and wanting this within your therapy practice?
I think yes. I think so. I'm not sure about the US, but here in the UK, I think that we are beginning to see that things aren't working as well as, you know, like the old system, which I think is very Newtonian based, isn't working as well as perhaps, you know, it should be. And I think, I'm not even sure actually, Michelle, at this point, I think people are beginning to realize that there's something missing, but I'm not sure that they're quite understanding what that is. Because, you know, you're right, when you get, when you go through college and you go through the traditional route, not that there's anything wrong with that, folks, but when you tend to do that, it can sometimes cut off the creativity and the out-of-the-box thinking where emotional healing is concerned, because you've got to tick the boxes, you see. Whereas now I think, you know, therapists or helpers are beginning to realize that, okay, something's missing here, you know, and we need to fill that gap. And not only that, I think that, you know, if we go a little bit deeper than that, really, you know, Michelle, I think a lot of it has to do with a therapist can only take their client as far as they've been themselves. Because you cannot, you know, so I think that, yes, I think there's a massive opening for it. But I also think that there are a lot of people who are qualified but have still got to do the deeper work on themselves before they're able to exactly, you know.
Absolutely. That's why I thank God for my early teachers that said, you've got to keep training and studying and keep opening on your own. And by the way, I did some training and studying in England, which I found in like holistic health or herbology, bringing in the alternative, they were much more open than we were in the States.
Interesting.
Yes, very much. And more of, I guess because like homeopathy really originated in Europe. So those kinds of things, and maybe a little more the occult. I do remember because I was going to become a Jungian analyst, and I was halfway through the program, and then I realized it's like coming in as an intuitive and a channel was good until I got to a certain point, and then they started saying, well, how do you know you're not delusional? And I'm like, oh, wait, what's going on? You're hearing voices. I'm like, oh, no, yeah. I cannot do this then. I mean, so I agree with you that somehow the systems of the way that we think get trained or, you know, the helping professions, those have to grow as well to embrace this part. Otherwise, it's you can't help somebody that may be having, you know, some kind of spiritual emergency or an emergence. It's not within your, training and for sure belief system or framework. Let me ask you this about the clients, the people that are coming to you, are they now, so getting out of the system, are you finding people more open to this part of themselves?
Yes, definitely. What I'm finding is that actually, firstly, I'm finding that I'm getting a lot of the overflow from the system. I don't actually work within the healthcare system. And the reason for that quite simply is that I don't feel that I am able to be as creative, in that system as I am outside of it. So very much from the outset, my opinion has always been that, okay, you know what, I don't actually want to work for a system. I'd rather work for myself because then I have complete freedom in how I choose to run my business. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I seem to be getting a lot of overflow because a lot of the traditional techniques are not working. So I'm getting these people coming in who are like, yeah, we've been for counseling before, but, you know, or therapy before, it's not worked. And I always tend to say to them, and sometimes people don't know whether they're open to this area. So one of the things that I do during my initial consultations is I'll always ask them whether they have any spiritual belief, because that is quite often my opening for me to get a feeler for where are you, rather than saying, do you know about this, that, or the other? I'll always tend to ask them, do you have spiritual beliefs? And if they say no, then I'll just go with the traditional method. And usually what happens is we get to a point where an opportunity opens up where we can widen the discussion slightly. And I'll tend to use scientific-based evidence to begin with to really start to talk about these areas, the scientific evidence that we've got and the studies and research that has been done. And then really using that as an anchoring point, really, and then moving forward. So, yes, I think it is. I think there is scope for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you talk about, let's look at the transcendent mind. You're talking about oneness, God, universe, all that is, all the resonance. You're talking about the totality, right? Or maybe you could go into that a little more.
Yeah, absolutely. So the transcendent mind is really, the best way to describe it is that if you imagine an ocean, and if we take a droplet off the ocean, you can place that droplet miles and miles away, but it is still part of the ocean. It has the same properties, has the same elements as what the ocean has. So in that way, that's very similar to us, that although we're individual, we still possess all of the same qualities and the same elements of the greater consciousness, the one being. So the idea is that actually, yes, there is a oneness, and it's very apparent when you look at near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, if you look at the research that's done in parapsychology, there's this emerging picture that there is, in fact, a oneness that exists. And it's really about, first of all, knowing that a oneness exists, and second of all, really learning how to tap into that transcendent element of ourselves. And I'm sure you'll agree, Michelle, it's really about balancing. It's about knowing that okay, there's our transcendent element, here's our ego, and it's not about getting rid of any one of them. It's really about learning how to integrate them into oneness, you know, to get it to work for you in totality.
So well put. Can you clone yourself in your book? I mean, really, I do. I think your book is a great, great read. But no, just saying, not getting rid of any one of them. I think we need, I think what you said too about the Newtonian approach and belief, I think that's where even some of our old paradigm beliefs and therapies and books and talks, you know, get rid of the ego, get rid of the pain body. It's all this separate cutting out surgery. Get rid of this. Don't do that, you know. And I'm hearing you saying it's integrating it. You know, it's bringing it all together, healing, true healing, bringing it all together and finding, you know, perhaps the most life-enhancing, you know, the most authentic way for that person to bring them together. But it's not about getting rid of, you know.
Well, absolutely, Michelle. Yeah, really, let's think about this. And I think this is one of the things that therapy, my own practice that I've learned, you know, through my own therapeutic practice is this, that you're right. I read a lot of texts that would say, right, we need to get rid of the ego or get rid of the pain body. And the first thing that I started noticing was, you know, I had to just bring myself back down to earth, actually. And I had to ask some very basic questions as to, well, there isn't a single person that I can see around me or that I know, even the most accomplished, spiritually accomplished people that I know that don't have an ego. So actually what I felt that I needed to start working with was the idea of integrating what I've got, because there isn't anybody that I can think of that has completely gotten rid of the ego. And actually, in the cases, if you look at like some of the old, the Hindu Maharishis, for example, that had actually transcended the ego completely, what you will find is, number one, a lot of them lost all purpose for being on this planet because
That's
the
right.
veil was completely removed. And secondly, now here's the interesting thing, they may have completely, in one aspect, achieved the transcendence, but some of them are actually documented as still having struggles with addictions or certain shadows or darknesses that they hadn't dealt with. So for me, it was about, well, okay, that's interesting. I can't actually say that I've read a single case yet of somebody completely transcending the ego, you know, that I could relate to. So I think based on that, you know, I was like, well, I think we really need to start integrating the light and the dark. It's who we are, and it's who we are right now. And we need to just acknowledge that we are here, we are now. Now, how are we going to move on from here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you need, believe it or not, in my first studies and training, I was too amorphous, learning too much. And one of my earlier teachers said, you have to develop an ego, you know, a strong sense of self, center. You know, you're too all over it. You're just too mergy. And I was like, what? You know, I was like spacey, you know, it was like, and now I get it, you know, that ego strengthening, that sense of knowing, you know, who you are, what you're about. One thing I want to dive in with you, Sunita, is this 7 essential tools for mastering your mind.
Absolutely.
If you can touch on that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, sorry, go on. Go ahead.
No, I want to dive into that, and then, like, what do you mean by mastering your mind, and to kind of touch on some of the tools.
Absolutely. Okay, so I use the term mastering your mind because in the book, now I talk about, you know, the different levels on which we function. And what I tend to say is that, look, you know, we have a body, we have a mind, and we have a soul. And it's really about nurturing all three elements of ourselves. So mastering the mind is not about getting rid of the ego, or it's not about, you know, always being in control all the time, but mastering the mind is actually becoming very aware about what it is that your mind is doing. You know, quite often we're on autopilot. So when we look at addictions, for example, or anger or whatever it is that we're looking at, you know, extreme cases, it's because the mind thinks that it is the master. And in fact, it isn't. The mind is a tool that we need to cultivate in order to use in a way that's going to work for us, you know. So how do we really gain mastery over the, you know, over the mind? And there are many aspects that we need to consider within ourselves. So for example, one of them is looking at your authenticity, you know, and authenticity is a is quite a hot topic, you know, in recent years, that actually, who are you today? You know, are you expressing your authenticity? What is your identity? Do you know your individual unique, you know, the uniqueness about you? Are you expressing it? Or have you become something that you're not, you know? So that's one of the tools that we look at. And actually, Michelle, if your guests want to go onto my website, I'm actually giving away for free that chapter, that the seven tools, you know, that they can basically just download from the website if they, yeah, if they wanted to.
Sunitapatani.com?
Patani.com, yeah, that's right.
Patani,
so that's,
okay.
Sunitapatani.com,
right. And they can download seven essential tools for mastering your mind. Of course, your book is amazing, too. I mean, the Transcendent Mind, the Missing Piece in Emotional Well-Being. But if people want to get started right away, they could just go to your site, you said, download that.
Yep, that's right. And they can, and they'll actually get, it's really good because they'll get actual in-depth, they'll get some in-depth stuff in there. So I talk about, for example, I'm not sure whether you read, Michelle, but there's a beautiful story in that chapter about a man named Tom Hudgens and about forgiveness, and how he, Tom actually was 9 years old when his 22-year-old sister was raped and murdered. And actually, 30 years later, during the course of learning meditation, he decided that he wanted to meet the perpetrator and just to find out and to try and forgive the perpetrator, you know. And they met. They actually met. And the healing, Michelle, my goodness, that went on between them when they met and when they talked. And it was beautiful when you read it. And the perpetrator, John Black, actually said, you know, he goes down and he says, well, he says, your sister lives on through me, you know. He goes, what I did was a despicable act. He goes, but in a funny sort of way, she's transformed who I am. Because actually, John Black then went on to become the man in prison who would be the one that would console other people. He would be the one that would hold the Bible all the time. So even though he committed, you know, a terrible act, he actually went on to completely transform. And of course, through all of that, Tom too, you know, was somewhat transformed through the power of forgiveness.
Wow, that's amazing. So is to me where we're going and what we need to integrate, you know, is this. The moving on, the forgiveness, and that people can still rectify, heal, and then share their gifts. They can still be of service. You know, it's very, very powerful.
It is, isn't it? And I think, you know, I think they're real good tests for us as well as individuals that, you know, we tend to have certain mind constructs that, well, you know, what are we willing to accept and what are we willing to not accept? And, you know, when we get sort of riled up when we look at, you know, murder cases or rape cases, it's interesting to actually look at what's going on within us at that time that, you know, it's about recognizing that, yes, the act is not right, but the person, if the person seriously has remorse and, you know, has really wants to move on, then we've really got to address what's going on within ourselves and why we're not, you know, open to that.
Always kind of comes back to us, doesn't it, Tanita?
It always does. Can't escape it, no matter how much we try.
Yes, exactly. It comes back to us. And I think your book is amazing and the tools are great. I really feel also so important is that you are looking at the mind as not us, but a tool, something that we can use, master, integrate, you know, again, knowing about that part of us, you know, just like we have to know about the physical part, what it needs and wants. So I think it's amazing. And I love books like yours because it gives practical insight. It's very inclusive, you know. Practical insight and practical tools that people can use, you know, that they can actually integrate in their life, that it's not esoteric, you know, but it's really something that's meant to be integrated.
Of course, and it really comes down to that, you know, that balance at the end of the day, that there's a place for the esoteric knowledge and then there's a place for application.
Yeah.
And again, it's the blending, isn't it, of the transcendent and the ego, and using the ego to actually work for you. So it's about knowing that really, I ultimately, you're a human being having a spiritual experience, and how to bring that together.
Yeah. Well, we are out of time. Love to have you back on again for part two, or anything that you would like to share with us. Just, you know, email Sadie, the producer, and we'll, you know, share it on air. It's been a joy to have you on the program, and I really thank you for all the work that you're doing, Sunita. Thanks for being on Awakenings.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. All right, that was Sunita Patani, and her book is The Transcendent Mind and the Missing Piece in Emotional Well-Being. Oh, such great insight and information. Definitely a great read. And all of you definitely are great audience, participant, listeners, co-creators. I appreciate you so much for being a part of Awakenings and just sharing all that you do, sharing your path, and by calling in, by being in the chat, and just by living more Soul Express. So I thank you all for being here and being a part of Awakenings Radio. And if you want any information about Awakenings or topic or guest suggestions, you can email me at awakeningsradio@gmail.com. And if you're interested in the Soul Entrepreneurship Program, which is starting soon, it's either going to be the end of this month or mid-July, we're working out the tech stuff on it because it will be international. You can go to info@soulentrepreneurship.life. Until next time, continue to share your insight, shine your light, and of course, keep awake.
Awakenings broadcasts every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific time. Archive shows are available on iTunes. For continued Awaken conversation and insights, join the Awakenings group on Facebook and visit Michelle's blog at soulinsightsforspiritledliving.com. That's soulinsights, the number 4, spiritledliving.com. Keep awake.